Chapter 2, You Are Selling the Wrong Thing, Going Beyond Bland Benefits. What do you sell? During my first sales job in college, if you asked me what I was selling, I would have said encyclopedias. In my first job after college, I would have said health and beauty aids, shampoos, toothpaste, deodorants, and so on. In my network marketing endeavor, I might have said telecommunications and utility services. Every single one of those answers would have been unequivocally wrong. What's your answer? One of the secrets of the masters is that they sell something completely different from what the average salespeople sell. What do they offer? Not only is what they offer different from what the representatives of other companies do, the truth is even more dramatic than that. They offer something completely different from what the people in their own company or their own business offer. Let's step back. Here's a critical mistake that salespeople make. Average salespeople are in business to sell their products and their services. Some find themselves in business selling their brands or selling their company name. Now, this may come as a surprise to you, but the fact is, customers do not really care about your product. They do not really care about your service. They really do not care about your brand name or your company. This idea is a shock to many people. I have repeated that fact to marketing and salespeople across the world for over 15 years, and oftentimes I've come close to being kicked out of the room. Some people take it as an insult, as though I were telling them that their baby is ugly. And yet, when they fully grasp the implications and the power of this truth, it has led them to dramatic improvements in sales and profits. It doesn't matter if you sell something as vital as detergents or telephone services. It doesn't matter if you sell something as desirable as ice cream or Viagra for male sexual enhancement. The fact remains, true experts in the sales game instinctively grasp this wisdom. Your product or your service is not what's important. From the perspective of end users, detergent is important, but they're not in love with it. The real truth is, for most people, detergent is perceived as a necessary evil. It's a harsh chemical that you don't want on your skin for too long. You dare not let it get into your eyes. Besides, it usually represents work, not fun, for the person who buys it and uses it. The same thing is true for electricity. It is a dangerous and potentially fatal spirit that oozes from the walls of the average home. Smart parents buy plastic covers for the electrical outlets to prevent their infants from being harmed by this deadly force. People don't want electricity, per se. Oddly enough, the same thing holds true even for something as desirable as ice cream or Viagra. Ice cream is pleasant, but it has a downside effect if you eat too much or if you eat it too often. Viagra is also a chemical, and it too has some very interesting side effects. At least that's what I'm told. Now let's talk about the approach of the masters in the sales game. This is so critical that I suggest you read it slowly when you pick up the book and that you listen carefully to the next section as I go through it. Here is how to master desired end states. What really matters to a customer when a sale is made is not the thing or the service that is purchased. The thing or the service that is purchased is a means to an end. What matters is the desired end state that the customer wants to achieve. Detergent is bought, but detergent is not desired. The desired end state is the comfort, the health, the self-confidence, and the social acceptance that the customer gets from fresh, clean clothes. This is critical. Let's take another example. Electricity is bought, but it is not the ultimate desire. The desired end state includes the convenience and the comfort that customers get from coolness or from heat and light that enables them to see. Ice cream is wonderful in itself, but it is a means to an end, the end of being satisfied, of feeling full, or of having a sweet, cool taste in one's mouth. Do you get the idea? Or do I have to spell out the desired end state of buying Viagra? By now, it all should be clear. Desired end state is a critical concept for anyone who wants to achieve mastery in the sales and the customer service game. The concept refers to a condition that is intrinsically appealing, inherently attractive, and is a true end in itself. It is a base or a root motivation for our actions, this thing called the desired end state. The actual thing or service bought is a mere vehicle or a mechanism that helps us achieve some desired state, some emotional experience, by resolving a problem or simply delivering a certain pleasing result. Detergent helps resolve the potential problem of uneasiness, of social rejection resulting from dirty, smelly clothes. That's good. Electricity helps us resolve the problems such as confusion in the dark and bodily discomfort from the heat and a hot, sweaty environment or a cold, freezing environment. It's good to avoid those problems. In the case of ice cream, there does not seem to be a problem, or there doesn't have to be one, but a cool, sweet taste in my mouth just makes me feel good, and that's enough to be a base motivation for me. Here's a primary application of this method of mastery. When you communicate with your clients, with your customers, or with prospects, using the pictures and language of their desired end states, instead of the language of your products and your services, you push powerful buttons that motivate them to take action, and they're then more likely to buy from you or to agree with you with what you're saying. There is no salesperson more influential than the one who connects the end results of his or her products and services to the gut level basic desires of the buying audience. So now let's go beyond features and benefits, because that's what we are taught in our traditional sales programs. In your sales presentations, how much time do you spend talking about the technical specifications of your, let's say, detergent, or the natural ingredients of your, let's say, your ice cream? When you are ready to close the sale, how much time do you spend talking about mere benefits? Product benefits are great, they're wonderful. But on the other hand, do you ever get to the root cause of why people would desire to have what you offer? Throughout the 1980s and early 1990s, detergent manufacturers such as Unilever, Procter & Gamble, and Colgate-Palmolive spent massive advertising budgets on television explaining to consumers how their surfactant chemicals lift away grime, break down tough stains, and lift dirt bubbles to the surface in the fresh water. The consumer was bored. In the mid-1990s, the major detergent suppliers changed the game dramatically. If you examine a laundry detergent ad on television today, you will observe a vision of health, of cleanness, a fresh lifestyle with people interacting in freedom and in joy. Somehow the consumer gets the message that if I use this detergent brand, I'll feel better about myself and my friends will accept me more. The brands that communicate this end state messaging most effectively, they are the ones that experience increased sales results. Let's take a different example. Pepsi-Cola does not advertise sweet, dark, carbonated water. No, their ads implicitly say that if you drink Pepsi, you too can be sexy or virile. You can be free, successful, and on the go. Nike does not sell products made of rubber and canvas. No, their shoes make you fashionable, athletic. They make you cool. Pop-Tarts do not promise you a dose of sugar and flour carbohydrates to start your morning. No, they offer the convenience and the energy of a quick and tasty breakfast. Are you getting the idea? Even if you do not represent one of those multi-billion dollar multinational corporations, can you learn from the best of them? There's a reason why they grew to be so big. There's something that they understand about the user, the consumer. You too can experience dramatic growth in your sales business if you are willing to refine what you sell in the ways being suggested here. Once you grasp it, this concept of selling desired end states becomes very intuitive. But it may be surprising to learn that many huge multinational companies still don't practice it. The concept may be intuitive, but like some huge companies, you may think that you get it, and it can still elude you. Here's why. Notice that in our detergent example, there are three levels from which to represent the offer. Less effective marketers and salespeople focus on level one. Those who are effective focus on level two. But the truly excellent, the masters in the selling game, they focus on level three. Where do you focus? What do you offer? So let's examine these levels using the detergent example. Level one. In answer to the question, what do you offer? The person who's selling at level one says, I'm selling super surfactants that melt away grime, that quickly dissolve granules. I'm selling the little blue dots that give great shininess to your clothing or make your clothes bright. They are brightening agents. How does the customer react to level one? The customer thinks, that's unacceptable. It's boring. It's features of the products. There's no personal value to me. Who cares about blue dots and surfactants? Level two. The person who's selling at level two, here's what that person offers. My detergents offer you clean, fresh clothes. No dinginess. My detergents offer you sparkling colors. Here's how the customer responds. That sounds like great stuff. But what's the big deal? Isn't that what all detergents are supposed to do anyway? Level three. Here's how the person selling at level three presents his detergents. As a result of using my detergents, you enjoy health, comfort, self-confidence, and social acceptance when you go out in public and interact with your friends. And the customer responds, that sounds great. I want one of those. Many well-meaning salespeople operate with confidence at level two, talking about just the mere benefits. Sure, benefits are great stuff, but they do not come close to this desired end state, this experience that customers are asking for you to give them. Benefits impress the audience. Desired end states convert the audience to buyers. Level one was selling features in the language of the 70s and 80s. Level one, talking about super surfactants and grime and blue dots, is selling features. Level two was selling benefits, talking about the cleanness of the clothes, the freshness of the clothes, the lack of dinginess, and the sparkling colors. Level three gets to the base motivation of why people part with money, and it's talking about desired end states or a personal experience that people have as a result of having your product. The question now is, how do you tell the difference between the three levels for your own products or services? In particular, how do you tell the difference between level one, level two, and level three? Here is a suggested approach that works. Let's talk about your products or your services that you offer. Ask yourself, what do I offer? Then repeatedly ask, why should anyone care about that? Why should anyone want that? So using the example again of detergents, here's how that might work. What do I offer? And the first level answer is, I offer super cleaners and brightening agents and surfactants that are very effective. And then I ask myself, why does the buyer want that? And then I say, well, because it produces clean, fresh clothes with sparkling colors. And then I ask, why does the buyer want that? And the answer is because it makes the buyer feel healthy and comfortable and self-confident and enjoy social acceptance. And then I ask myself, why does the buyer want that? And I really have to scratch my head and think, no reason, I guess. The buyer just wants those things. I guess they make him feel good. I guess they make him feel great. There are two principles to bear in mind as you do this analysis, as you go through this exercise. First, when you get to the point where you run out of reasons, when you run out of rationalization, reasons why your offer is important, it is that point when you can't quite explain it that you're at the level of desired end states, Why? Because desired end states or that experience are the personal, private, core motivators that drive people to action. And there's no reason, it's just inherent in us to want certain things, to feel good, to be good, to look good. Typically, there are no justifying reasons for desired end states other than it just makes me feel wonderful. How do the things that you offer make your customers feel? How do you get them to feel free and alive and worthy and recognized and safe and loved and special and so forth? Because when they feel those ways, they don't have to explain them. They're just good enough to want, to desire. Seek out those connections between your products and the experience your customers enjoy and develop your list of compelling buying reasons. That was the first principle. Now, second, if the things that you offer are easily substitutable, then they are not desired end states. What do I mean by that? Notice that there is no substitute for comfort. You're either comfortable or you're not. There's no substitute for self-confidence. You either have self-confidence or you don't. There's no substitute for social acceptance. Each of them is inherently desirable and nothing replaces it. If any of these things is missing in the human heart, it simply leaves a hole that nothing else can fill. That's why desired end states and experience are such a base primary motivator. Those desires are always present. They're always now. If you get me to believe your product helps me achieve those emotional states, then you have my attention. On the other hand, if what you offer is great detergent, I could postpone the decision. I could buy a competing brand, or I could substitute something for detergent. Fine granules and cleaning agents with blue dots are also dispensable. They're easily substitutable. So why do I need yours? Now, before you complete your own exercise, here is an important question for you to consider. But what if you don't sell directly to the end customer? Some people do not sell to people, they sell to institutions, they sell to entities, to committees, etc. If you service a corporate buyer, if you service a purchasing agent or a buying committee in an organization, the same principles are true even though those people are not the end users of the product or service that you sell. First of all, let's see if we can rupture a myth here. If I ask you, who is your customer or who is your client, how would you answer that question? If you say the ABC company is my client, or I sell to the government, or the XYZ industry, or if you name any other organization, you are perpetuating a myth that could be taking bread off your table. Here's the myth buster. Nobody sells to a company or organization. Every purchasing decision is made by people. Huh, what a revelation. Even the mighty government is broken into small groups of individuals with specific roles, interests, and desired end states. In business-to-business sales relationships, a salesperson or an account team sells to an individual or to a buying group comprising individual people. Each buyer or each group has a set of desired end states that your product or your service should help to satisfy, to achieve. If you identify these end states and represent them in this exercise, and then you communicate them with conviction at the point of purchase, then you are likely to be successful. In so doing, you will be using the approach of the masters. Replicate their approach and you will replicate their results, the high volume, the high commissions, the wealth, the recognition, and the satisfaction that they enjoy from being successful. So let us examine a few possible responses across different types of selling situations. No, you may not sell detergents, but this applies to you. And let's look at an array of different applications. This should help you in your own analysis with your own products. This is a point at which you should turn to page 30 in the book Persuasion Power and look at the tables that are there, page 30, page 31, and continuing on to page 32. So the first example here is skincare. Remember now, level 1 is features, level 2 is mere benefits, level 3 is desired end states. If someone says, I'm selling skincare products, here's how that might be rendered. One, level 1, Features. I offer white, creamy lotions with emollients and minerals and super enzymes. And the buying customer says, that's unacceptable, it's boring, it's just features. There's no intrinsic benefit to me. Who cares about that? Level 2. I'm selling easy to apply, great fragrance that's economical. Use just a tiny drop and you get a broad coverage over your skin. The buyer responds, okay, I certainly wouldn't want something that's the opposite of that. I wouldn't want it to be hard to apply. I wouldn't want it to be bad fragrance. Oh, and I'm not as worried about economics as you might think, telling me about how cheap it is to spread this lotion over my skin. So you haven't really gotten the buyer's attention. Level 3. I'm selling smooth, beautiful skin. You feel gently seductive and very attractive when you use my skin lotion. It gives you self-confidence and it gives you social appeal. And the buyer responds, ooh, I want some of that. Now, if you happen to be selling your skincare products to a corporate buyer, it may go like this. New products help you to attract your target shoppers, and they are high-income females. They spend more, and they help you to achieve your sales budget so you can get the rewards and recognitions from your boss that you desire. And then your corporate buyer may say, okay, let's try it, because that, for your corporate buyer, is a desired end state, the recognition and the success enjoyed in front of the boss. So that was skincare. Let's move to a second category, telephone services. Level 1, what do you sell? I offer services with dependable support, state-of-the-art fiber optics. My products include call waiting, call forwarding, caller ID, and many more technical features. And the buyer says, what's the big deal? Isn't every telephone company supposed to offer all that? Those are the features. And then you move up to level 2, the benefits, and you say, I offer excellent service. I have toll-free numbers for 24/7 customer service access. Also, I offer great pricing. And the buyer says, that sounds fine. I should hope you'd offer good service and value. And then you move to the customer to level 3, desired end states. What do you offer? I offer peace of mind. This is the best service money can buy. You will have the confidence of knowing that I am your agent, not some distant mass producer. I am there for you to call me if anything goes wrong. I also offer you freedom and control. There's no need to sign a year-long contract. The buyer says, that sounds great. Sign me up. Now, clearly, this is simplistic, and not every buyer is going to respond as predicted here. But you get the idea. You increase the probability of your buyer showing interest in what you have when you begin to speak to the gut level, the experience, the desired end state. And a third category, insurance coverage. Level 1, features. What do you offer? I offer strong AAA rated company support. I offer agents in every major city. Wherever you live, you will find support there. Our company writes 12,000 policies per month. We are big. The potential buyer says, so? Who cares? Level 2, what do you offer? I offer low-priced premiums. I offer discounts for car and home combination. I offer quick, simple application process so that you don't have to spend a lot of time filling out paperwork. Potential buyer says, okay, I like to save money, but now that you're talking about pricing, I don't really want to take on another bill, because that's what an insurance premium represents to me. Level 3, desired end state. What do you offer? I offer peace of mind. You're taking care of your family very well when you buy a policy from me. I offer you freedom at retirement. There's a big financial payout when you reach age 65, and that gives you the peace of mind and the freedom to do what you want to do at any age. And the potential buyer says, that makes sense to me. Let's do it. Let's consider a real estate example. Level 1, features. What do you sell? We offer all concrete construction. The house is only 2 years old. It's very clean, and there's a very large living room. And the potential buyer goes, yeah, but do I like it? Level 2, benefits. If you buy this house, you will be close to shopping. The house offers you low monthly payments, and you can stop paying rent and start paying a mortgage for something that you own. The buyer says, it sounds good, but eh. And the buyer is looking for reasons to agree with you. Level 3, desired end states. If you buy this house from me, it will make you feel secure because the house is the best construction you can find. It gives you safety in hurricanes, and it'll keep you feeling like you're taking care of your family. The house is also beautiful and it's stylish. The kitchen is wonderful. It gives you great convenience. You're also close to shopping and to highways, and that will give you quiet peace of mind knowing that you can get on the road and be home again as quickly as possible. And the buyer begins to think, wow, you're right. Imagine me owning that. And finally, let's consider the category of motor oil. The features, number one, level number one, my motor oil has new silicone technology. It has an all-weather application and it lasts 50% longer than the average motor oil on the market. The potential buyer says, yeah. Okay. Level two. My motor oil is a proven brand name. It's the best quality that money can buy. And tests are showing that it is more effective than the average oil on the market. Furthermore, it has an easy pour spout. And the potential buyer says, yeah, that sounds fine. Now, the question is, should I buy it? Level 3, desired end state. When you buy my oil, you will feel a sense of pride. It's the best money can buy. You will feel smart because you're protecting this expensive investment called your automobile. The buyer says, now that's the brand name I want. It should be obvious to you by now that features level one do not sell the products or services. Even level two, mere benefits, may not produce the feelings or the desires that pull that lead to closing the sale. All of that may be obvious and it may be true, but there is another major reason to avoid spending most of your time on features and benefits, at least traditional benefits. When you specialize in the features, functions, the benefits of your products or services, the customer is not always going to give you the direct feedback that you need to show you what's wrong, as in the examples above. In other words, when you go off talking about features and benefits, it's unlikely that the customer is going to tell you what he or she is thinking, as was the case in my example a while ago. If the customer told you what he or she was thinking, that would be a great wake-up call for you to modify your approach and your presentation to the customer. Instead, the customer is likely to engage in extensive discussion about these features, asking you questions, giving you opinions, and leading you to think that there's great interest in what you're saying. You end up wasting time discussing fiber optics and blue dots and megawatt hours of your electrical service and dial tone quality, and the customer gets no closer to saying yes, and you leave disappointed. Benefits are definitely better than features. But even though benefits can be interesting and worthy of discussing, if the customer is not feeling it, the purchase will not take place. When the customer begins feeling it, desiring the experience that the benefits can deliver, then the purchase is much more likely to happen. So let's talk for a moment about feelings, because as you may perceive in all of this, we've been talking about practical attributes of your products or services. We've been talking about benefits they deliver. And then the third area was something that was very emotional, something to do with desires and experience. Feelings versus function. Notice that there doesn't have to be a direct functional connection between the desired end states and the physical attributes of your products. Oftentimes, the benefits are aspirational, or they're visionary, or they're imagined even. That is why Pepsi can conjure up the feeling of the full, sexy, free lifestyle, even though the physical thing that they sell is, in fact, dark, sweetened, carbonated water. And there's no real literal connection between those. They know the psychological end states that consumers really want, and they deliver by suggestion through their messages. This is an important concept. Desired end states are usually psychological, emotional, or feelings-based. Therefore, skillful marketers help to elicit such feelings in their customers by connecting their brand image to the desired emotion. To be clear, We're not suggesting that you should promise something that your product or your service cannot deliver. No. It is not as though there's something wrong with promising the sexy, full, and free lifestyle and then delivering a physical product that is dark, sweetened, carbonated water. Rather, it is that feeling sexy, full, and free are exactly that they are feelings. Most desired end states are not functional or practical or physical. In fact, if the emotional experiences were stripped away, the physical product would be irrelevant or, at best, easily substitutable. This is an important concept. And so the functional thing that you offer truly becomes meaningful to the customer only when it is tied to the satisfaction of desires that are feelings-based. If your customer wants self-esteem, recognition, and a sense of style, and those desires can be fulfilled by a bottle of drinks, by an automobile, or by a pair of shoes, then so be it. The customer desires a certain feeling, the image of the product elicits that feeling, and the customer is happy, so the customer pays. The formula works. Let's move on to the next section, people no longer buy things. And this will give us some perspective and some background about this feeling versus function. During the industrial age, people used to exchange money for things. Buying decisions were characterized by satisfying needs through acquiring goods and services. Today, at least in the Western world, buying decisions are characterized by satisfying wants, exchanging money for an experience. The industrial age is gone. In the present information age, people have far more data and awareness of what is available. As one example, the presence of the internet has revolutionized people's awareness and their expectations. As a result, competition has become global. Products can quickly be compared across continents to find the best quality, the best dimensions, prices, and shipping times. The availability of such information is now expected and is taken for granted by your customers. In the sales equation, that information is mere features or benefits at best. And so, what remains to drive the buying decision is this: what feelings will I experience when I buy it from you, when I am using it, when others see me using it, when I think about having it, when I observe my loved ones benefiting from it? The present times have been labeled the age of consumerism. You may choose to call it the age of personal gratification or hedonism or some other denigrating name. The fact remains, people will not part with their money repeatedly unless doing so gives them the desirable experiences of fulfillment, comfort, peace of mind, confidence, social acceptance, recognition, on the soft emotional benefits go. Given that fact, if you are in the business of selling, you had better understand and address the desired experience of those people you want to exchange money for what you offer. Yes, present the facts, present the features, but only as necessary to support the satisfaction of desires, of wants, of feelings. Gear the language and the focus of your selling presentation to help your customers or your prospects gain experiences that they desire. When you do that, you gain access to the button that people push in order for them to transfer money from their bank account to the bank account of your company or your business. Do you want to win repeatedly in the game of sales? Then you must avoid being average, boring, and irrelevant. Do you seek mastery and the rewards that mastery offers? Then stop thinking and talking like everybody else does. The masters are few and they are different. Their language is visionary. They do not sell physical attributes or even functional benefits. That's pretty good salespeople talk. That's how the average salesperson does it. No. Mastery demands that your communication convey to your customers or your prospects the end feelings or emotional experiences that make them want to say yes to what you offer. So in conclusion, here's the bottom line. You could be selling the wrong thing. Doing so can rob your family of food, shelter, and clothing, not to mention robbing you of success and recognition. Stop building your sales pitch around the functions, the features, and the functional attributes of what you sell. Get to know how prospects or customers think and what they desire or want. Convert your benefits to desired end states. Connect the advantages of your products to the experiences your customers or prospects find to be desirable. This practice will give you persuasion power that makes people say yes to you far more often.